Hi, I'm Sam Payne. Welcome to The Appleseed. Today's episode is going to be a little bit out of the ordinary, and I'll tell you why. The Appleseed is brought to you by BYU Radio, which is, of course, sponsored by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And each year, the church sponsors a worldwide campaign focused on making acts of service part of your holiday practice. The campaign is called Light the World, and you can visit lighttheworld.org for ideas and opportunities that can help you experience the joy of helping other people at Christmas time. Of course, there are a lot of ways to do that, and we're going to celebrate the spirit of Christmas time acts of service by bringing you something a little special today. We thought we'd reach out to some of the storytellers you know and love from the Appleseed and ask them to tell us about an act of service that impacted their lives. These aren't stories polished up for an audience. They're just straight, thankful talk about the good done by a few simple acts. We think you'll love what you hear today, and we hope that these stories help you think of ways in which you might reach out during this season. Now, first up, we visited with our friend Kim Whitecamp. She joined us from her home in Ohio and told us about a time long ago when she and her young family were just starting out, a time when it was tough sometimes to make ends meet, a time when someone reached out in a way that Kim's family won't ever forget. Here's Kim.
When I think about the holidays, the very first thing I think about is a very precious memory with these two people, Jim and Mary Ann Ingram. We had just started Bible college, and my husband had broken both of his wrists playing softball. Well, we had spent all of our savings to pay for his first year of college, and we had two little girls, and it was a really tough time. And I remember one evening, all I had in the pantry was noodles and corn. And you may think, well, come on, you had to know people. We know nobody there. We knew nobody. And my pride kept me from going to my family. I knew it would work out. Well, I thought I'd been hiding it from my kids. I didn't think they realized how bad things were because I wasn't working because I had yet to find a job that paid enough to put two children in daycare. And we sat down for dinner, and it was buttered noodles and a side of corn. And my daughter, Tiffany, asked if she could pray, and I said, sure. So we all bow our heads, and she prayed that God would bring us food. And it just, what welled up in me, it was heavy because I thought, oh my gosh, they actually know. They get it, these little girls. Well, after dinner, we were cleaning up and putting everything away when there was a knock on the door. And I opened the door, and there was this couple standing there that I'd not met yet. Like, we were very new. We weren't on campus because there wasn't any housing open for us, so we were off campus for the first year. They introduced themselves as Marianne and Jim, and they said, look, we feel so bad, but we run the couples ministry. And when we have new couples, families move in with children, we fill their cupboards and their fridge. And you fell through the cracks because you're not on campus. And we found out about you. And so we have some food for you. And I stood there while they brought in breads, vegetables, frozen items, meats, canned goods, homemade canned goods, so much food that the next 2 days, my daughters and I walked the neighborhood and gave out bread items because we couldn't fit it all in our freezer. After they left, I looked at my daughter and I said, wow. I said, your prayer really worked. And she dropped to her knees and prayed for a pony. No, she didn't. She didn't do that. But these are the same people who just a few months later invited us to their house for dinner. And when we walked in, it was decorated so beautifully. There were gifts underneath the tree and the tree was lit up and we had a wonderful meal. And we sat down in the living room just to talk with them. And they loved the kids. They loved my daughters. And she walked over the tree and started handing my children presents. I'm going to get emotional. And everything under that tree was for my family. And I've never forgot that. And most of the time when I serve, and I feel reluctant in doing so because that does happen, I remember Marianne and Jim and the absolutely unconditional love they gave a family they didn't know.
Kim Whitecamp. You know, it's been years and years since the events of that story. Kim's kids are grown-ups now. Kim is in a different part of her life now, and it's been a long time since she's had needs of the sort she describes in that story. But the special memory of that Christmas remains in a way that, as you can see, still makes Kim emotional. We loved hearing from her. And we talked to other friends for today's episode, including Tim Lowry in South Carolina. He joined us from his home office to tell us about a time when he was just starting to make a living as a storyteller, and a blessing came along that helped, quite literally, to get him down the road to some important storytelling gigs. Here's Tim.
When I was a very beginning storyteller, I began in the most ridiculous way. I was at a booking conference, and a teacher walked up to me and said, "Do you have the month of February free?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "We'd like to book you to do stories for our first grade as an artist in residence for the entire month of February." And I said, "Fabulous." So I signed a contract and everything. And then I went home and called my dad and said, "Dad, I don't have a car. And I just got my first storytelling job, like 2 hours drive from where I was living. What am I going to do?" And my dad said, "Call your preacher." So I called my preacher and he said, "Come see me." So I went to see my pastor, and I did not know that my pastor absolutely loved car shopping. So he told his secretary, he said, "Just take messages the rest of the day. Tim and I are going to go buy a car." And I'm thinking, go buy a car? I don't even have any money. So we drove to a local dealership, and he asked for the owner himself to show us around. And I picked out a used pickup truck, and I test drove this thing, and I'm thinking, my job doesn't start until February, and this was sometime in January. I don't even have money to pay for this thing. But I just kept doing what he told me to do, and we finished test driving the truck, and the owner said, "I'm going to turn you over to a new employee, a new salesman, and he will work out financing for you." And so we sat down with this guy, and we no sooner sat down in the little finance office, then the owner came back in and he said, "I am so embarrassed. I let you test drive a truck from our used lot that someone else had already put a down payment on, and we forgot to have it removed from the line of available vehicles. So I can't sell you that truck. Someone else has already committed to buying it." And I said, "Well, you know, easy come, easy go. What else you got?" And the owner looked at me and he said, "Well, you know," he said, "your friend is a very good customer of ours. We go back a long way. And I am very comfortable with him vouching for your ability to pay for this. And I realize you're starting a new job next month, and you won't have a down payment until then. But I really want you to succeed in this endeavor. So I tell you what, I have a brand new pickup truck that we haven't even taken the plastic off of yet. If you could give me 20 minutes to get it unwrapped and washed for you, I'll sell you the brand new truck for the price of the used truck." And my pastor, who was a dear friend, he said, "I think you know a good deal when you see one." And as it turned out, years later, I ended up going to church with the auto dealer. And I told him that story, and he didn't even remember. He said, "Well, that sounds nice. I'm glad that worked out for you."
Tim Lowry. What a pleasure to hear from Tim. You know, not everyone has the wherewithal to give someone a brand new truck for a fraction of its value. But there are a lot of people who look for opportunities to give what they can. And when they find those opportunities, it really makes a difference. And while the person in our next story wasn't in a position to put someone in a brand new truck, they were able to gather up their loose change in a way that made a difference for Antonio Sacre and for all his cousins and for the whole neighborhood. Antonio shared this little story with us when we last had him in front of our studio audience. And it wasn't one of the performance stories he had prepared for the show. It was just a little memory of his Uncle Henry. Here's Antonio Sacre, who came from his home in Los Angeles to tell us stories in the Appleseed studio.
My uncle, Uncle Henry, he was such a gruff man, such a sort of angry in some ways. And every 4th of July, he would go down to Dunkin' Donuts. This is a Boston thing. And he would buy 10 dozen donuts and just march down the street. They had a 4th of July parade and just hand out donuts to all the kids. And he would do it in such a way that it was almost like that they would get scared, but he was sort of the 4th of July donut man. And he made us clean up the yard. There was all the sticks in the yard, and we would find little coins underneath the branches. He would sort of sew the coins underneath the branches and then make us pick them up. But he didn't have that much money, you know, and so like the fact that he would save his money to buy the donuts for the kids on the 4th of July and give us this change. And then, of course, at night, he would teach us how to play 21. So we learned how to count, and they taught us how to bet, and he'd win all his money back. So it was like this sort of like this give and take, you know? I don't know. So anyway, yeah, I didn't have, those are just small things that I think about.
Antonio Sacri. Antonio begins that story by describing his Uncle Henry as a gruff and even angry guy. But as you listen to Antonio talk, couldn't you hear the love for his uncle shining through the gifts and donuts and spare change and in the time Uncle Henry invested in playing 21 with Antonio and his cousins? Antonio prefaced that story when he told it to us by telling us that the act of service that was most meaningful to him was just the time his loved ones would spend with him. It's probably important to note here that Antonio has a son named after that uncle, Uncle Henry. That's how meaningful those little things can be, how much they can impact a life and the life of a family. You know, a lot of us get our first taste of performing acts of service in church. Church youth groups get together for service projects, weeding the widow's garden, or painting the fence of the old veteran, or serving lunch at the homeless shelter. I remember when I was a teenager, living in my little hometown, surrounded on three sides by enormous Rocky Mountains. One summer, the mountain caught fire. Hundreds of acres burned, and we watched it burning up there, a massive fog of smoke by day, and an ominous and terrifying glow by night. Maybe 150 firefighters came to fight that fire, and it took them a couple of weeks to do it. And all that time, they slept in tents pitched in the city park in the middle of town. And the local church congregations took turns making meals for those firefighters. And I stood with the other teenagers in my neighborhood in the church hall, assembling peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for the men and women who were working to keep our town safe. And we'd load those sandwiches in paper sacks with fruit roll-ups and little bags of potato chips and cans of soda. We'd load all that into pickup trucks, and we'd take them down to the park, and we'd feed those firefighters. And I'll always remember that for the rest of my life. You know, a couple of years later, the church congregations in my neighborhood were invited to put together clothes and furniture and food to furnish apartments where refugees from Eastern Europe were coming to live, folks who hadn't been able to bring really anything with them. And I was amazed at the army of pickup trucks filled with beds and sofas and trunks of clothes and plastic totes filled with canned goods that showed up at about the same time I did with my dad in our own car full of stuff. Amazing how much could be provided by simply skimming off the surplus in our own homes. And while you don't have to be in a church congregation to perform good and useful acts of service, it was a good place for me and my friends to learn about the good that can be done when people as individuals or in groups follow that impulse. And of course, growing up as I did, there were plenty of times when a box of groceries or an envelope full of Christmas cash had been discovered mysteriously on our very own front porch, and often in the nick of time. And I remember later, as a grown-up, I'd been asked to sing some songs dressed as Santa Claus for a work Christmas party in the middle of the day one Christmas season, and I did. And everyone sang along. It was great. We sang Hark the Herald Angels Sing, and we sang Jingle Bells, and we sang Feliz Navidad. And when it was over, I drove away from the building still dressed in my Santa suit. And I was suddenly seized with a kind of magic feeling, the kind of magic feeling that comes with the complete anonymity that exists behind a big fake Santa Claus beard. There I was, not looking at all like myself, And cars were driving past, and, well, they were seeing Santa. And I couldn't help but imagine at least some of them thinking, hey, there's a guy dressed as Santa Claus. I wonder what he's going to do. And, frankly, I began to wonder myself. And I found myself turning into the parking lot of a fast food place, a taco place. And I got out of my car as Santa Claus, and I went in, and I got in line with all kinds of ho-ho-hoing. And when I got to the counter, I bought 20 burritos. And then I spent the next half hour or so handing those burritos out. I handed burritos to the folks waiting in the drive-thru. And I went next door and handed burritos to the kid working at the gas station. And I went to the little copy and mailing place next door to that and handed out burritos there. And you know, I had a ball. And everyone who got a burrito had a ball. And it's a good, fun Christmas memory. That was years ago. And since then, I've wondered if, with just a little thought, I might have focused that Christmas energy on acts of service even more meaningful to people who may have needed them even more. And when I go down that path in my thoughts, I find myself amazed at how much I have to give. You know, give yourself a minute to think, and I bet you'll realize the same thing about yourself. It may not be burritos or peanut butter sandwiches or sofas or canned goods or pickup trucks, but it might, or it might be something else. Follow the helping impulse at Christmas time. Follow it as far as it goes, and I bet you'll be amazed at where it leads. I know I always am. You know, up next, we called our friend Bill Lepp and asked him if there was an act of service that had impacted him. Bill tells funny tall tales. He makes people laugh. And that's the main thing he does. And he told us the story of someone who went out of their way to perform an act of service for him, to pay him a compliment that took him by surprise, a compliment that helped him see that maybe telling tales isn't always just fun and games, that there might be more there. Here's Bill.
I was at a storytelling festival in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, a long, long time ago, and a woman came up to me, and she told me that she had just had a cochlea implant, so just for the first time in her life, she could hear, and she said that when she got the implant, the two things she wanted to hear most was birds singing, and then she had been bringing her children to see me at storytelling festivals and other places, and she wanted to hear what it was and what I was saying that made her children laugh so much. And sometimes I just, you know, sometimes you get the feeling that as an entertainer, maybe you're not really doing anything worthwhile. And it's, but that was a really moving moment for me because it really made me feel like I was doing something worthwhile.
Bill Lepp, you know, can you imagine someone telling you that what you brought into the world ranked right up there with birdsong in terms of how much joy it was capable of generating? Something like that might make you take your contribution to the people around you a little more seriously. That kind of compliment doesn't take a lot to give, but it can make a lot of difference to someone who needs to hear it. Keep your eyes open for someone who might benefit from that sort of an act of service from you, and I bet you'll be surprised at the opportunities you find. But I want to share one more conversation with you today. We called our friend Sheila Arnold and asked her about an act of service that made a difference for her. We caught her in a hotel room on the road telling stories. It's where she can often be found. And she told us a story about engaging in an act of service herself, an act being to show up as a surprise from clear across the country at a graduation party for a family friend. But as she traveled, Sheila found that she wasn't the only one with acts of service in mind. Here's Sheila.
I was on my way to Oregon, to Portland, Oregon, flying on a plane there. And it had been a heavy couple of weeks of performance and travel. But I really wanted to get into Portland, get my rental car, and drive over to Corvallis, Oregon, about an hour and a half away, because I wanted to be able to surprise a young man, a student I knew from a school whose family had adopted me and I adopted him. He was having a senior graduation or soon to be graduate party. And I was completely going to be surprising him and his family by showing up. They had sent me an email and told me about it, but they knew I couldn't come. But I realized as I looked at my schedule, I could make it. I could go from California, where I was doing all kinds of performances, fly up there to Portland, stay overnight, and fly back to where I was going to go. And I wanted to do it, and I wanted to surprise them, encourage them, because they had become family to me. But I was tired. I won't lie. It was gonna, you know, there was a little bit of a cost to this in my life. I got on the plane. I sat down in my seat in economy class, and that was fine. I sat down, and a man comes up, and he looks at a woman on the end seat. There's three seats beside me. Looks at the woman that's near the window and says, "Would you be willing to trade seats with me?" And she goes, "What? Would you like to go to first class?" And she says, "What? No, I'm fine where I am. I am." And I was like, "Oh, okay." And then he looks at me. He said, "What about you? Would you trade seats with me?" He said, I'd like to sit with my wife here if you trade seats with me. I'm like, "Well, I think it's wonderful that you want to sit with your wife. As long as you don't have a middle seat, I could do that." And he's like, "Great, here's the ticket." And then the stewardess, flight attendant standing behind him, says, "Please follow me, ma'am. Grab your bags." And I walk up to first class. And I immediately know this man must have got it wrong. And I go back and said, "I'm sorry. You did." He said, I get to travel all the time, but rarely do I get to travel with my wife. And when I do, my company doesn't pay for her to go first class. So I always try to switch with somebody so I can sit with my wife." And I thought, "Oh." And I sat in first class. And I rested. Oh, my goodness. It felt so good to rest my bones, to get something to drink. It just was lovely. And then I got off the plane feeling rather good. Again, amazed that I was given this space. And I go over to pick my rental car up. And when I get the rental car, I notice something on one of the tires. So I pull this guy over. He has a heavy accent, Eastern European accent. He says, You do not need to have this car. I will fix this car for you." So I'm thinking he's getting me a tire. No, he gets me a whole new car. Whole new car, and it's an upgraded car. And he's like, "And you will pay nothing extra. You will have this car. You must be protected and careful when you are about." And I'm like, "Oh, how sweet." He says, "I try to watch out for everybody. Some people need people to watch out for them." I was like, "Okay." And so I got this car. And I basically, because then they took some of my, I used some points. I got it for $0 because they replaced the car. And then I rode down and I drove, and it was a perfect drive, not a stop along the way. I picked up some friends and we went over to this gathering, and I walked in, and it was a huge surprise. As a matter of fact, he looked up and he said, "Hey, Miss Sheila. Hey, Miss Sheila, what are you doing here?" And I was like, "Oh, it's just so good to see you." And when I rode back that evening back into Portland after visiting, I thought how kind people were all the way around. I'd said that to a friend in the car, and he said, "Well, you were kind too. You came to see a family, took your time." And it reminded me, the goodness we put out is the goodness that is returned to us. We don't put out the goodness so it can be returned. We just put out the goodness because we can. And when goodness is given to us, we need to say thank you, smile, be pleasant, and start thinking, who can I serve next?
Sheila Arnold, describing a trip in which she was trying to perform a surprise act of service for a friend, and found herself surrounded by acts of service done for her by other people. So fun to share these stories with you today. Again, today's episode has been a little out of the ordinary as part of the Light the World campaign sponsored by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We're thinking about making acts of service part of a meaningful Christmas time. If you're looking for ways to serve the people around you, pay a visit to lighttheworld.org. I'm Sam Payne, and it's been a pleasure to be with you today. We'll see you next time for great stories from great storytellers on The Appleseed. If you love The Appleseed, check out Wink, Stories for Better Bedtimes. It's another BYU Radio podcast we think you'll love. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts.